What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 4 of Puck Culture. My co-host this week is Callie. I'm calling him that even though we just met like a week ago, but Ryan Callahan joins the show this week. How you doing?
Good, very good. You can call me Callie. My parents actually call me Callie.
Do they really? So it's, when did that start, like as a kid?
As a kid, it was always Cal. Okay. Up, and then once I started playing junior hockey, it kind of switched to Cali. And
oh, that's what, like, you were like officially considered a good hockey player.
Exactly.
So it's, you got to get like a hockey player nickname.
They added the Y to it. I knew I was good.
So creative, adding the Y. That never happens.
Yeah, I know. It seems like everybody's that way. But yeah, so all good.
Hard to believe we're already in episode 4 of Puck Culture's brand new podcast this season. Happy to have you here. And this is like sort of a whole new territory for you. You know, you're working at NHL Network now. You weren't playing very long ago, or you were playing not that long ago, excuse me. So when for you did it kind of come onto your radar where you're like, I could maybe do media?
Yeah, I actually, before two or three years ago, we were at the World Cup. I was supposed to be playing. I was injured, so I wasn't playing. I had hip surgery, and the NHL Network asked me to come on, and to be honest with you, I was like, I don't know if I want to do something like that.
Right.
But I'm like, whatever, I'll go on, see how it is. And I really enjoyed my time on here. And so it's kind of always in the back of my head since then. Once I was done playing, maybe I could jump into something like this. And
right.
Timing worked out, and they called me and asked me on board. And I've enjoyed it.
And here you are now. I love it. And you've already been introduced to a little bit how psycho I am, but I'm just going to fill the viewers in on what's been going on this morning. I'm in a Fitbit steps challenge right now, and honestly, it's taking over my life. Like, I have psycho tendencies at this point. I'm pacing back and forth during commercial breaks, in heels, and I'm injured now. And I'm in fifth place, Ryan. Like, it's not like I can say, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm killing myself, but I'm winning. I'm in fifth place.
Yeah,
out
I just
of 10
I actually
people.
Just walked into the studio and I see you pacing back and forth. Like, you got your sneakers on. And
oh yeah, like I'm not even wearing heels right now.
Serious.
I'm just like, my outfit's ridiculous. I'm like, I don't even know who I am anymore. And there's not even a prize. Like just bragging rights, just the ability
to
say.
Who are
I
you competing against? I guess is the big question.
Okay, so there's 10 people total. I'm in fifth place. My boyfriend owns and operates a gym out in Nova Scotia, so it's him. And then there's 8 other women that are in this challenge as well.
From the gym?
6 of the 8 are from the gym.
Okay.
2 are, like, my 2 best friends back home are also in it. And I thought for sure, I'm like, if I average like 15, 20,000 steps a day, like, I'll be at the top for sure. First of all, let me clarify, we were all playing for second place because there's no way Emmett was letting anybody beat him. So he's like, he's like over 100,000 steps in 2.5 days, but he's on his feet all day. So anyways, I've got like blisters on my feet. I'm like in a bad mood. I open the app and I'm like angry. It's crazy.
I can't believe you're taking it so seriously.
Have you ever taken a bet or a challenge so seriously?
I'm a very competitive person, so I can kind of relate with you on that one.
So I mean, you would be pacing too.
I probably would be. I probably wouldn't tell anybody else that I'm doing it, especially not on a podcast or anything like that.
So I have no shame, essentially.
I respect your competitiveness, I guess.
That's all it is, right? It's like, I just want to win. That's all. That's all it's about. So we'll see how I do, but I'm in physical pain at this point. So we'll see how it goes. But right now I'm in fifth place. But let's talk some hockey because there are so many surprising teams in playoff spots right now and surprising teams that aren't in playoff spots. What's the biggest sort of surprise to you at the quarter mark of the season so far?
Yeah, I guess the biggest surprise doing well would be Arizona, Edmonton. I didn't see either of those teams having the starts they've had, and especially Arizona. Obviously bringing over Phil Kessel, everybody thought that, you know, it'd help them offensively. And if everybody looked at the standings today and saw them there, you'd think, you know, Phil's Phil in the net.
Yeah.
But he only has 3 goals on the year so far. Obviously he's playing well, but that's a pleasant surprise there in Arizona and the Desert Dogs, and I'm excited for them. And then I guess on the flip side of that, if you were looking at teams that are a bit of a surprise, my old team Tampa, I thought would get off to a better start. Toronto is obviously a big team. Nashville is another one. So there's a lot of teams that we predicted to do well at the start of the year who aren't doing as well to at the start here.
Those are the interesting ones, right? And obviously Toronto is going to take a lot of heat because of where they're located, the center of the hockey universe, in a lot of people's minds. And Tampa coming off such a historic season, to see both of those teams out of a playoff spot is bizarre. It's weird. But I do think they're both dealing with different things. For the Leafs, you know, they've had a ton of injuries. And the narrative, so to speak, in Toronto has become like, are they tuning out Mike Babcock? What are the signs of that? How can you really, from the outside, tell if a team is tuning out a coach or not? Or is that just the easy thing to say when things aren't going well?
I think it's definitely the easy thing to say, and I don't think you truly know unless you're in that locker room.
Yeah.
You know, just from viewing a team play, it's hard to tell if they've tuned out a coach, which does happen time to time, and,
yeah.
and you've seen it happen over history, but it seems a lot easier to get rid of a coach than it yeah. is to get rid of players. And so I think a lot of fans and even media, you know, point at the coach right away and look at that as a quick fix.
But, right.
Yeah, it's surprising.
I've
what's
said it
going
before. I'm like, maybe they're just like trying to play defense and they're bad at it. Like maybe they're really trying hard and it's just like not something they're good at. That could also be like
that could be
what's
part of
happening,
it, I guess.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, but as you said, they've had some injuries there and. There's nowhere to hide in Toronto. I mean, you know, things start going bad there and it could snowball pretty quickly and take on a life of its own. And it seems like it's getting to that point.
Yeah, it really does. And you kind of look at it and you wonder what must be going on inside the room. You played in the league a long time. I'm sure you've been on teams where the coach was being tuned out. As a player and as a leader, what actions do you take at that point when things just aren't going well? People are frustrated with their own individual performance. Then they're thinking about, is our coach going to be here in a month? What do you do as a player to try to fix it?
Yeah, that's hard because there's a lot of outside noise, a lot of noise in the room. And I think the big thing is you just start playing for each other, playing for the guy next to you, playing for the logo, playing for the Maple Leaf. You know, you just try to block out all that outside noise. Mm-hmm. Take it slowly. I know it's cliche, but literally you take it period at a time, game at a time, because, you know, when you're in a slump like this and all
I
of a sudden...
I love it. Cliche counters at like 8 already.
It is, though. I mean, it's cliche and everybody says it, but it's honest. It's truth because you're in a situation like this where you're in a slump or things aren't going well and all of a sudden you're down 1-0 in the first period and you can just feel the life come out of the bench because you're like, here we go again.
Yeah.
But it's important just to take the small steps with it and try to improve your game and... They have the talent to do it.
Oh, my gosh, do they ever.
It's not like they're looking around the room and being like, we don't have the guys here. We don't have the personnel to do it, because they do. So that's a positive if you're a Leafs fan.
Yeah, and we've seen other teams, right? I mean, the Sharks and the Dallas Stars are great examples of teams that started out terribly. I mean, not even just bad, like awful. And now here they both are putting wins together, and all of a sudden they look like different teams.
Yeah, and going into the year, I think everybody had those two teams high. I know I picked Dallas to be one of the favorites this year, and off to the start, I was like, uh-oh.
I just want to say, I did not say uh-oh when Dallas was struggling. I did a whole video about how I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I had the knee-jerk reaction, I guess,
That's fair.
Yeah, but yeah, like you said, they have the personnel, so you can't worry about those teams too long. But we are at the quarter mark, as you mm-hmm. said. So I mean, how long can you say it's still early for these teams? You're getting into the meat of the season now.
And we always hear too in the media about these closed door player meetings. I'm sure you've been involved in a few yourself. Have you ever had like tough conversations with people, or had to give a motivational speech to a guy that maybe was, I don't know, down in the dumps because of where he was at or where the team was at? Like, what is that dynamic?
Yeah, you got to pick your spots, I think, with it. I've obviously, being the captain in New York and being a leader in Tampa, I've ran some closed-door meetings,
yeah.
called closed-door meetings, and a lot of things get said in there that, you know, that with the coach not in the room, trainers aren't in the room, and it's kind of just a vent session.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it turns into people calling people out. And
do you think that's healthy in some ways?
I do. I mean, you're holding each other accountable is the biggest thing.
It's like relationships, right? Like if you're in a relationship or you're married or whatever it is, and you don't call each other or talk about the things that are maybe not going well, then you really have no shot at ever fixing anything, right?
Exactly. And you know what happens is you have those moments, and say you get into it with one of the guys, I guarantee you the next time you're on the road or that night, you're going to grab a beer with them. So
yeah.
It's, you know, everybody's a family. Families have fights.
I love it.
Families have blowouts. And I think you said it's healthy.
Yeah, for sure. I want to. So this wasn't a closed door meeting, but Scott Hartnell was on this show, the first episode. And he told a story about, you know, being on the Columbus Blue Jackets and things weren't going well and they're all in the room and Torts is doing his thing. And he said that he stood up and said to John Tortorella, you know what, I think you're the problem. Yeah, he said
I don't know if I believe, but he's still here.
Yeah, he said that, I know, right? He said that Torts was like, you know what, Scotty? I am part of the problem. You're right. I'm being too negative and all this stuff. And I was just like, wow, that's ballsy.
Yeah.
But if he did, good for
good.
You.
I mean, in playing for Torts, I know that's something actually he would respect. You know,
yeah.
You know, he holds himself accountable as well, and he likes that conflict and challenge, and I could see Torts respecting that.
Now, you played for Torts when you were with the Rangers, and that was a crazy shot blocking team. We're going to get into back into the league and stuff, but I'm just curious about like the art of blocking a shot, because it's not just getting your face out of the way and hoping the puck hits you, right? Like, there's an actual technique to it.
There is, yeah. We were labeled, I guess, I forget who said that, but the black and blue shirts for
yeah.
for a reason. We blocked everything, but there is an art to it. I mean, you can't just go out there, close your eyes, and hope to the puck hits you. You got to make sure you're lined up with the stick, not the player. There's an art of when to go down, when not to go down. The timing of it is the biggest thing. I mean, you can't fully sell yourself out, because there's a lot of guys in the league that will pump fake you and walk around you and make you look
pretty silly. Then you're on the highlights for all the wrong reasons.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there's definitely an art to it. And the biggest thing is not everybody in the league wants to do it. So it's I think it's that commitment and willingness to stand in front of a shot to help the team.
Who was the best shot blocker on that team?
Dan Girardi, by far. I think he holds league history the most blocked shots. And I mean, you know, obviously I was being really close with Girardi and going after games and stuff. You could just see the welts and the bruises.
Oh my
on
gosh! And I'm sure like all of his teammates must just respected him even more because of what he was doing.
Exactly. Yeah. So
yeah.
I mean, you're out there, and the thing is, you see a guy like him lay out for a shot, block it, knowing that he's already got a bruise there, he's already hurting.
He's like hobbling to his car after the game.
How do you not go over the boards and lay out and block a shot also? So there's a leadership factor too that goes into that. And he definitely was amazing at doing it.
What about the goalies?
Yeah, I mean, they give you the tap on the pads, and they appreciate it all. It's when it goes off of you and then changes direction. It's a little bit different, but I think they realize your intent and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back to the Tampa Bay Lightning because we got into the Leafs a little bit. But, you know, Tampa's obviously a team that you're a little bit more close with. You kind of know what's going on there a little bit more because you were there. What do you think's going on with them right now? Because they looked good in Sweden. They came back. They had that dominant win over the Rangers. Do you think they're just sort of trying to iron things out?
Yeah, I think they're trying to change their game a little bit, be more defensive hockey, try to limit the turnovers, which I think has really hurt them early on in the season, has hurt them in the past as well. When I was there, I really thought this trip to Sweden was going to reset them, change things, because they get away from all the noise and everything.
Yeah.
They came back, win the two games there, come back, like you said, beat the Rangers pretty well.
Like embarrass the Rangers.
Yeah. Now they lose, obviously lose back-to-back to two good teams, Winnipeg and St. Louis. So it's a team trying to find their way right now. And I think going into the year, I said it on the network, it was a lose-lose for them coming into this year. And what I mean by that is, if they got off to a great start, everybody's going to say, well, what are they going to do in April? Right?
No one's
that. And if they get off to the start they've had so far, is it the hangover?
Are they still dwelling on that
playoff exit? So they're never going to live up to what they did last year.
It's almost like you've seen what the media does with narratives before.
Yes, I've seen it, yes, once or twice.
There's always a narrative, yes. Right? But it's a good point, because if they were first place in the Atlantic right now, racking up points, we'd be like, okay, well, let's wait to see what happens when the times get tough.
We expected this, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be getting talked about that much, but it's good. Maybe they're facing a little bit of adversity they didn't face at all last year.
Well, that was the story, too, when it was all said and done, and I was one of these people pushing that narrative of maybe the regular season was too easy. That sounds crazy to say, because you want to win the President's Trophy. You want to come first place in the league, but when it comes that easy, do you think that was part of what happened to them, that they didn't face any, or you guys, they didn't face any adversity, and then you get to the postseason, and you're taking on a Columbus Blue Jackets team that's been basically, you know, desperate just to get into the postseason for 6 weeks.
Yeah, and then Columbus, obviously, on top of that, made a lot of deadline moves that I think that really helped them out. But we didn't. We faced zero adversity. You know, we didn't have any of those closed-door meetings. We didn't have any of those blowouts. But
man, life must have been so good before
April,
eh? Like, just going to the rink, winning all the time.
Yeah, we had a good swagger to us, I guess, going to the rink and knowing. But the thing about playoffs, too, is, you know, you lose that first game. We have a lead going into the third period, two-goal lead. We end up losing that game. There's your adversity right there. We lose Hedman early into that series.
Huge loss, too,
loss
for that team.
Cooch for game three. So we're hit with a ton of adversity right away in that first week of the playoffs. And you play bad for 1 week, or you're down for 1 week. Columbus played really well. You're
don't have the luxury of time to sort of figure it out. Like, okay, who are we without Hedman? We got to figure that out really quick.
Exactly.
So it kind of makes sense how it falls apart that quickly. We'll see if the adversity early on maybe pays off for the Bolts down the line, because if they can right the ship now, then who knows. But we're happy to have you at the NHL Network. We're happy to have you on the Puck Culture Podcast right now. And you've only been doing TV for a little bit, and already you're on the air having to talk about a guy spitting at another guy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because, you know, I thought he was pretty open and held himself accountable after the game, saying, you know, I just was so emotional that it just sort of happened. I just did it and I wasn't thinking. As a player, what did you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, obviously it was disgusting. Can happen. But I think, like you said, he held himself accountable. In that situation, I think he just kind of black out. Your emotions are so high. But it can't get to that level. I mean, it's disgusting, let's be honest, you know. And I guess timing was right with me being on the network with what I went through with Marchand. But yeah, it's...
Have you talked to Marchand since that all went down?
I haven't. No, I was waiting for him to buy me a drink or dinner after something like that.
Yeah, so you would think maybe in the summer he might be like, sorry, bro, I kind of messed up there. That didn't happen?
No, it didn't happen, so I'll keep my phone on.
We'll see. So you haven't blocked his number or anything. Yeah. He can get a hold of you if he wants to, so that's good. But it had me think, have you ever done anything within competitive spirit? I mean, we talked earlier about how competitive I am, right? Like pacing back and forth, I'm in pain, hobbling around here, trying to stay in this competition. And I remember when I was younger, I played hockey growing up, and I must have been like 10 or 11, and I was so frustrated in the game. Like, I wasn't getting any points for like a while. Like, it had been a few games. I'm in this game, it's against the best team in the league, and I'm just frustrated. And I can't even believe I'm gonna say this on the podcast, but I was a kid, okay? I was like 11 years old. I kicked someone.
Kicked him?
I kicked someone in the shin on the ice, with my skates on. I got so mad, in front of the net, not in their end, it was in our end.
Yeah.
And I kicked a girl in the shin with my skates. She was fine, nothing happened. We have shin pads, obviously.
Did you get a penalty? Did everybody see it?
I got a penalty, and then I had a conversation with the commissioner of the league at my next game. The commissioner wasn't at that game, but then my next game, I was not playing, and I had to talk to the commissioner. I just remember... Not even just feeling bad, but actually being embarrassed. Actually just being and I was 11, I was young. Yeah. I could have thought it was nothing, but I had the wherewithal to be this is embarrassing. Yeah. I kicked somebody.
You know,
what
right
am I
wrong,
doing?
Right? That's the worst part.
But it's a real thing when you're really frustrated or passionate about something and it's not going your way, that sometimes you do stupid things.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, I guess growing up as a kid, too.
I never kicked anyone.
Kicked anyone, spit on anyone, licked anyone. But I used
to... I never spit at anybody.
I used to have my temper tantrums and break sticks and things that. And I remember my dad sitting me down and saying, you know, if you break another stick, you're not going to play anymore and things like that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, it's...
Which is a big deal for a kid, right?
Emotions run high. And I remember even playing board games, you know. My parents bring it up. I used to flip the board game and... You know, I get that competitiveness. I don't know
family game night. You're playing Monopoly and you're just flipping the board.
Games, yeah. I don't know how many PlayStation controllers I smashed when I lose to my older brother. And I've gotten that taken away from me a lot of times when I was a kid. So
it's real. The competitive spirit is real.
Runs deep, yes.
So where does that energy go now that you're done playing?
The kids, exhaust me, right?
Yeah, you probably get a lot of steps in a day.
I do, yeah.
Kids.
I should join the challenge. Yeah.
No, I don't need more competition. All right, it's hard enough for me as it is. I don't want you in there. I don't think I could compete.
Yeah, it's all the energy goes to the kids. They wear me out pretty good.
I would think so. Let's talk about good surprises in the NHL, because the Coyotes are one. We talked about them. The Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers are at the top of their division. Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid are racking up points like it's a video game. I mean, those two are unbelievable. We knew this, but even this is insane, I think.
It is. It's
even for them.
It's remarkable. It's fun to watch. You know, it's so fun to watch. I remember playing against those guys and specifically McDavid, and I used to sit on the bench and literally in awe. You know, it's probably the only player I've ever sat on the bench and watched
and just been like, wow.
Wow. You know, the amount of speed he can gather through the neutral zone, the moves he can make at that top speed, and it's fun to watch as a fan now and just enjoying the game. If they're on, I'm watching them because it's entertaining.
How about Leon Draisaitl? Because you're on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
You know what Twitter's like.
Oh, yeah.
People like to be critical on Twitter.
Of course, yeah.
And a lot of people, whenever I tweet about the Oilers or we talk about them on NHL Now, they'll say, oh, Leon Draisaitl wouldn't have all these points if he wasn't playing with McDavid. You know, people kind of discrediting him because he's playing with arguably the best player on the planet. Do you buy that, or what can you say about the way Leon Draisaitl plays?
No, I don't. I think they complement each other well, which helps both of them.
Helps anyone.
I think they both have a little bit different games. Draisaitl has a size. He'll go into those dirty areas a little bit more, obviously, than McDavid does. And I think they just complement each other well. I think McDavid would still be good without Draisaitl. I think Draisaitl will be good with McDavid, but they complement each other.
So
I think
they're a duo.
They both excel because of each other.
But, yeah.
No, I wouldn't take anything away from him just because he plays with McDavid.
I always say, like, or I want to reply to these people and say certain things, but I hold back because of my feistiness. But I always think, too, like, Connor McDavid's played with a lot of people. It's not like this is Connor McDavid's first year, and not everybody's putting up over 40 points in 22 games just because they're on the ice with McDavid. So it's kind of a weak argument to me.
I agree. Yeah, and I think you nailed it. You nailed the head there. He's played with other players. Why aren't they?
Why don't they have 40 points in 20 games? Come on, you're playing with McDavid. You should be able to, it should be no problem for you.
Exactly.
Do you worry about the Oilers, though, when they hit the postseason? Because I do think that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl could totally carry this team to the playoffs. That could happen. And I don't want to discredit, I mean, they've gotten good goaltending. Mm-hmm. They've had other things go well. But in a seven-game series.
Yeah, that's where your depth gets challenged. And we mentioned it before. When I was in Tampa, we played Boston. In the second round, in the first game we played them, that line of Bergeron, Pasta, and Marchand just absolutely torched us, killed us. We lost 6-1 or something like that, and their line almost had all the goals. And that was the main focus after the game, is we have to shut these guys down, and we focused so much energy on that
second
line.
Second round 2 years ago, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. And we focused so much energy on that line, and we did. We shut that line down, and they didn't have the depth or the scoring to step up to complement it. We ended up winning the next four games, so... that's something that they might run into trouble with. They got to find that depth scoring, and guys got to find their roles there. And come playoff time, it's usually those third line, second line that step up and make a difference.
They have to because of all the focus being on those star players, right?
Yeah, and it wears on you through a seven game series. I mean, you can bet you whoever the Edmonton's playing is going to make life hard for McDavid and Draisaitl in a seven game series and be all over them. They won't have a inch on the ice with a stick or a butt end or something in their side. So
it's a different game, right? Like it's a completely different league once April hits.
Completely, but they're at the same time they're talented enough to work through that. And you know, I'm not worried about them, but I think their depth is something that will be challenged come the postseason.
And I think it's a challenge every team faces, right? Because you also have injuries when the postseason gets here too. So it's not easy, as they say, to win the Stanley Cup. But we'll see how far Edmonton can go. For Tampa and Toronto, are you worried about them, or do you think they'll both? If you had to predict right now,
I'm less worried about Tampa than I am Toronto.
Fair.
Tampa has, I think, 5 games in hand on Toronto. You know, obviously you still have to win your games in hands, but Toronto just seems like they're in disarray, and I can't put my finger on one reason why, but they seem like it's a little bit more of a mess there north of the border than it is down south, and maybe just because I've been around the guys in Tampa too and know the character in that room.
And I think too, a lot of the core players on the Lightning, they've been through more together, right? Like they've been to conference finals, they've been to Stanley Cup finals before. They have more experience in that regard than the Austin Matthews and Mitch Marners of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have been to the postseason, but they haven't been on a deep run in the postseason. So figuring out what that takes is something that you can only learn through experience.
That's a great point. I know, you know, Hedman and Stamkos being two key parts of that have been to, I want to say, 3 conference finals, 1 Stanley Cup finals, and then that core they have now have been 2 conference finals, 1 Stanley Cup finals. So they have the experience. They've had long, good playoff runs where Toronto, you know, struggled to get out of that first round because of Boston. But
oh my God, that's all the playoff format, right?
Oh my goodness gracious!
I'm
less worried about Tampa than I am Toronto.
I'll say this though: all of the surprises this season makes it so much more intriguing. Like if everything was going exactly how we expected, it wouldn't be as entertaining to talk about.
I agree.
I look forward to seeing how it plays out. For now, though, we're going to welcome in our guest of the week, Jax Taylor. You know him from Vanderpump Rules. He is also a massive, massive hockey fan. Jax, what's going on?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're awesome. We're excited to have you on. I want to set the record straight, though, right off the top, because I'm trying to figure out if you're a Red Wings fan or an LA Kings fan, because you could be either one. I'm just not sure where your loyalties actually stand. So, on the record, which team is your team?
Detroit Red Wings, for sure.
I like okay. that. I can appreciate that. Way to stick with the hometown team.
Yeah, I'm a Red Wings fan. I mean, I'm from Detroit, so I just live in California. So I'm kind of a fan here because I'm associated with LA. So.
Right. That makes sense. Well, where did your love of hockey start?
Well, like I said, I grew up in Michigan. I played hockey in Fraser, which is a town, is an area in Michigan. It was called Fraser Hockeyland, actually. And I just grew up playing. My neighbor was playing when he was 6 years old, and my dad, threw some skates on me. I tried playing like defense for about, I think I played defense for like a couple days, and I hated it, and I loved goalie, so I just went right into goal.
Yeah, they always say goalies are a little different, though. That's the thing. How long did you play for? When did you stop playing?
I stopped playing. I got into college. I could have walked on at Ferris State, but I decided not to do it, and I decided to take other ventures. So I think I played up until I was 18, something like that.
Okay, so your whole childhood, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I played, and then I just, I wanted to go to the college route. It was the dream, but, I wasn't quite good enough, but I was good enough, but I wasn't quite good enough. I was kind of on the fence,
Okay.
So I kind of said, I think it was time to hang them up. It kind of sucked, but I still became a fan.
Well, yeah,
still
and it all worked out well for you. You're doing well in life. So, you did respond.
Okay. Things are okay.
You did respond quite quickly when Callie said goalies are a little bit different. So you definitely agree with that. What makes Jax Taylor a little bit of a different cat?
Well, I think I'm just a different guy all around anyway. So I think it kind of, when I tell people I'm a goalie, they're like, well, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
So people that know you are like, oh, yeah, he's a goalie for sure.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, let me ask you about the Red Wings right now, because it was a tough start for them. But ever since they made a certain acquisition, they've been looking lot better. What do you like? What do you think of your team right now?
I'm liking it. I like Fabry. Eiserman's a sneaky guy. He's a sneaky guy. He knows what he's doing. So we just got to give him some time, but that acquisition of Fabry was awesome.
Yeah, they're doing so well.
I think they'll be okay. We need a few other guys, but it's a rebuild. It's going to happen. It's just for the fans. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. And Yzerman there, I had him in Tampa, obviously, and he's unbelievable at what he does in constructing a team. So, as you said, give him a little bit.
He's awesome.
Give him a little bit of time.
Steve, everybody loves Stevie Y.
He needs to run for mayor, or governor, or something. Because he's so well liked in Detroit.
Well, you live out in L.A. You're a Red Wings fan, but you've been out in L.A. for a while. So I assume you were out in L.A. when the Kings were winning cups. So how many cup parties have you been to, sir?
Oh, man, and those were the days where I didn't have as much money as I did now, so I couldn't go to that game.
It would have been a hot ticket for sure.
Yeah, I mean, even the cheapest ticket, my buddies and I were going, the cheapest ticket was like $1,500, and we're just like, we just couldn't afford it at the time. And so we just stayed around the arena, around Staples Center, and just partied at local restaurants and waited for everybody to get out. But it was a lot of fun downtown L.A. I mean, people were going crazy. It was a good time here.
Yeah, that had to be a lot of fun. During that time in L.A., I can only imagine the parties going on and the scenes at the bar.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it was amazing. And people just want to party, just to party. In L.A., like, people don't really, they understand the game. They understand the game, but they don't understand the game, if that makes any sense. They go, they like it, they want to see fights and stuff like that. When I go to the games now, I like to usually go by myself because people like to talk to me a lot, and I like to pay attention. So it's a little frustrating, but the sport is awesome. It's such a great sport. I just want to make sure everybody understands the game out here and is knowledgeable of the game out here and the sport grows.
I love it. You're a real one, Jax Taylor. Well, you just got married. Congratulations on the wedding. Does your wife watch hockey with you ever? Does she like it?
How it started was we would go to games, and then when the show started, the wives would go down to Brittany. So the wives would meet Brittany, and then they would bring me back. They would bring us back into like the players, or the wives would watch the games, and then I got to meet the players. So it worked out perfectly. Every arena we go to, the wives would meet Brittany, and then I get to meet the guys by association. So it was awesome. I bring her to every game I go to because that's how it happens.
Yeah. Oh, smart. That's so smart.
Oh, yeah, I use her as bait.
You're like, I really want to meet some players on this team, babe. You got to get in with the wives. Get in with the wives for me.
Oh yeah, every game we go to, they find us somehow, and then that's how I get my way in. So I use her.
That's smart. Sounds like a great woman, though. So congratulations again on the wedding.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Now, we knew you were coming on the show, so we took a look at your social media feeds, wanted to see what was going on. You've been tweeting about Lifetime Christmas movies. So are you a big, like, Lifetime Hallmark Christmas movies guy?
Huge. Just because they're so cheesy and they're so bad and the acting is awful, but we just love watching them. You know, it's typically the girlfriend who's stuck in the town for Christmas, and usually the guy, he lost his wife or they got divorced and the daughter's looking for his dad to have a new girlfriend.
It does always go that way. It's always like a central character that's going home and like runs into an old flame or like something. Something always goes that way. What are you up to right now? Tell our viewers where they can find you.
Well, right now we're back in LA. We just finished the show. We just got back from a thing called BravoCon in New York, where everybody got to meet all the Bravo celebrities that they liked. So right now it's a little bit of downtime. A couple of the girls on our show are planning their wedding, Stassi and Lala.
Okay.
And Brittany and I are just getting ready for the holidays. We got family coming in for Thanksgiving, and then for Christmas we're going to be heading to Kentucky, Michigan, and Florida.
Very nice.
So, Jax, do you play any men's league hockey still or no?
Oh, of course. Nice. I don't play goal anymore, though. Yeah. I play out. But I play roller hockey. The ice here is just I can't afford to get too hurt. So I stick into the roller hockey right now. I play out of men's league on Mondays and Wednesdays. It's a lot of fun.
All right.
Yeah, roller hockey in L.A. is a lot of fun.
Are you a playmaker or a goal scorer?
I would like to say I'm a little bit of both.
Okay.
It's wherever they throw me in. I like to pass.
All right. You're a good utility guy. Whatever they need from you, you can do.
Whatever they need.
Yeah, I love it. Jax, thanks for joining the show. We'll have to check in with you throughout the season. Thanks for this. We appreciate it. Have a great holiday with your wife.
Thank you. You guys have a great holiday, too.
All right, there you go. Jax Taylor, massive hockey fan. I love it. I love that he wants to promote the game in L.A., too, that he even talked about
that.
That's
awesome. Love it.
Really cool. So he plays beer league. Now that you're, or maybe even in your career, did you ever go play with like regular Joes in the summer or anything like that?
Never when I was a pro, but when I was younger, I think I was in eighth grade, maybe ninth grade. There was like a beer league tournament going on in Rochester, and one of the dads actually that I knew grabbed me and a buddy, and we went and played in it. And there was this big uproar. We ended up winning the tournament.
Oh my gosh!
There was this big uproar there that we were too young to play in it and everything else.
People were just mad because you guys were better than them.
Exactly. Yes.
So they recruited a couple of eighth graders
exactly.
to help them win.
Yeah.
Wow, they must be so proud to have brought you guys into the mix.
I think we won like a cooler or something to at that time put our soda in.
Yeah, your pop.
Yeah.
What's your pop of choice?
Coke. Yeah.
Okay.
I've actually stopped drinking it.
Yeah, it's I'm not a big carbonation person, but that's a topic for
another day. Yes.
But hockey culture is amazing, and it's getting new fans each and every day, the latest of which just happens to have two Super Bowl rings. We talked to Damian Woody on last week's episode ahead of his first ever New York Islanders game experience. Obviously, they're on a tear, so we have to check in with Damian, with Woody. I call you Callie now. I call him Woody because I feel like, you know, we're on those terms. So, Damian, what's up? How's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. You looked like you had such a fun time at the game. Was your son with you?
Yes. My son, I had one of my daughters, and obviously my wife was with me, and we all had a blast at the game. The fan experience was tremendous, and like I said, I'm grateful for what the Islanders did, setting us all up with the suite and the front row seats. And the fans were tremendous at the game. It was tremendous energy in the arena.
Yeah, it sounds like they set you up pretty nice there. How did your son like the game? He enjoyed watching a hockey game live?
Oh, my gosh. You know, we've watched a hockey game, you know, obviously on TV, but everyone has always said that it doesn't compare with being live at a game. And the whole time, just his facial expressions were priceless. And we were able to take a lot of photos and show him what his facial expressions looked like. And he was just in awe. He had a tremendous time, and he's ready to get back to the game on the 30th.
Yeah, sounds like it was a great family experience for you guys. And it is true. Hockey is so different in person, watching live, than on TV. But you're going back to another game. The Islanders are on fire. You know, this fan base might actually expect you to consistently go to games now.
Listen, I've had so many people from Twitter like, listen, now that you're all in, you have to be all in. We need you all these games. So I'm like, guys, listen, I'm going to come to as many games as possible. Obviously, I have a lot of other obligations with work and you know, being a father of seven. But I'm all in. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be rooting the team on, you know, throughout the whole season. So this whole thing has just been an eye-opening experience, and I'm enjoying every second of it.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of pressure on you now, though, after the good luck charm of the Islanders.
So good. You just said you're a father of seven. Ryan here is a father of three. Any advice on the parenting journey that you guys are both on right now?
Well, listen, you got to be a little crazy when you're a father of seven, obviously. And yeah. You got to have a lot of patience. So my kids are tremendous. We've been blessed to have kids that are good kids, and they strive to be the best in everything that they do. And they're along with the ride as well. So they're going to bring the whole family out to the game on the 30th.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I struggle with three. There's no way I can expand to seven. I feel like I'm stretched thin as it is. So.
He could put a whole line out there on the ice. If
I know, and one extra.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, we got a little crew.
That's awesome.
I love it. Well, listen, have a great time at the next game. And now that you're this big Islanders fan and the fan base has high expectations from you, we might have to make you a regular correspondent.
I am down. Like I said, if you're going to be all in, be all in. So I'm down whenever you guys are down.
I like your style. Damian, thanks for joining us again. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, you too, guys.
Damian Woody, he's so great. Seven kids, though. I mean, that is...
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I struggle with three, so I can imagine.
That's being outnumbered to the max.
Yeah.
He's a great dude, though. And something that we do every week on this show, Ryan, at the end of the show, is we have a segment called One Upper. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Seinfeld episode about one-upping people. But since we have a different player on every week, we get a story, and then the analyst the following week tries to beat that story. So Stu Grimson was on the last two episodes, and his big story was that he hung out / partied with John Candy. However, and I'm going to rip Stu a little bit here, because everything's about details, right?
Yeah.
A story is better when you get details.
Those, sure.
That's all he gave us. He didn't say really what they drank, where they went, nothing. Just that John Candy was a really nice guy, and he used to hang out with
him. I can make up any story and say I can hang out with anybody.
Yeah, like, you got to give me details.
Yeah,
like, you can tell me a story about someone I've never heard of before,
yeah.
But if the story is better, I'm going to say that you're in the lead.
Yeah.
So the floor is yours.
Yeah, I guess so. I racked my brain. I have no celebrity one-uppers, but
that's okay.
You also told me that Rupper's going to be on
next
episode.
Yeah.
Right? So I want you to ask Rupper about
yes,
a
oh
time
my gosh,
that,
yes.
And I think he's mentioned it before, but a time that he was, we were playing for Torts. He was late to the team meeting, so he wasn't showing up to the rink. So,
oh no!
As the captain, I took it upon myself to take his stuff down out of the stall. So I put down his pants, his skates, threw some sticks in his stall because Torts is walking around
to make it look like he was there.
To make it look like he was there.
Oh, that's
so, you
so
know,
Torts good.
Walks up and where's Rupper? And it looks like, I don't know, he's here, obviously. I don't know, he's got to be somewhere around here. So Rupper ends up being late. Torts never finds out, thank God, because you could only imagine
oh,
what
my,
Torts
can
is
only
do
imagine
with,
if
with
you're
Rupper
late.
If he's late. So I'm still waiting for Rupper to buy me a drink, a dinner, something.
Wait, he never
nothing.
Picked you? Oh, my goodness.
Nothing. So, I mean, I don't have a
Rupper.
One-upper story, but I want you to ask Rupper about that. And
that's a pretty good story, though, because
yeah.
I'm going to pump your tires a little bit while I chirp Rupper, because that's like that. Now, that is some good leadership right
yeah,
there,
like,
right?
Put
like,
my
I
neck
covered
on the line,
you.
You know, right?
Imagine if you got caught.
Imagine I got caught, yeah.
So Torts doesn't know about this to this
well,
point.
Well, he does now. Hopefully he's not listening.
He's calling you
I'm
up like,
get a phone
you
call.
Mean you lied to me?
Yeah.
Like, well, I didn't lie. I hid something.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit. I like that.
The truth, but
that's a real team player right there. Rupper owes you steak dinner for
something,
sure.
Something, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? All right, we're bringing this up with Rupper next week for sure. But it's been a slice. Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah.
We appreciate having you here. I'm sure you'll be back.
I am. I think I'm back in a couple weeks, actually. So.
All right. Well, I promise when you're back, I won't be a psycho step counter like I am today. Because
okay.
You've had to deal with a lot, and it's pretty early on Wednesday morning. So thanks for being a good sport. And thank you guys for listening to Puck Culture. This is one of a family of podcasts that the NHL is doing this year. The other one I really like is the Fantasy on Ice podcast, because if you need fantasy advice for your hockey team, that's where all the goods are. So make sure you check that out too. You can find it anywhere that podcasts are found. Thanks for listening.